goddess and tax goddess live, and you are here today. You see our fabulous guest. I am so excited today. Today is Tuesday, the 25th of September, and my name is Shauna. I am your tax goddess, and if you have joined us before here on Tax Goddess Live, you know that we are here to bring education and entertainment and inspiration to all of the entrepreneurs and business owners and crazy, fantastic, passionate, self-employed people out there. So today we are here with Greg Reese. Greg, are you ready to do this?
I'm ready, Shauna.
Fantastic. Greg is an expert in using a variety of strategies to help people protect what is most important to them. And as you guys can tell, that's a really big, broad statement. And that's because Greg is an expert in a lot of things. But today, we're going to be covering one of the most important strategies. As you guys know, Tax Goddess is all about tax. So from my perspective, one of my favorite strategies that Greg uses is something called the Deferred Sales Trust, which is a unique legal strategy to help clients sell appreciated assets. So you can hear him going really slow, guys, right? This is a strategy for appreciated assets and help them defer the taxation and recognition of the gain on the sale of those assets. Big mouthful, guys. Big mouthful.
You're great with that.
Well, you can say that. It's easy. You're the expert. This is good stuff. So, Greg, why don't you give our listeners some statistics that are going to blow their minds today?
Whether it's mind-blowing or not, we'll see. But people don't often recognize how much taxes they would pay when they decide to sell or exit from an asset, which could be a business, a piece of real estate, a high-value collectible. But the taxes they could pay on that profit is as much as 35 to 45%. In total, that's one. And that's kind of shocking. We don't like that. Number two, there's a strategy for real estate called a 1031 deferred exchange. But what a lot of people don't know about is about 30 to 40% of those exchanges fail, meaning that the clients have to recognize taxes when they weren't otherwise expecting to.
30 to 40% fail. That's massive.
Exchanges fail. Because there's a lot of boxes that have to be checked, and if you don't check every box, it fails. The last one is people that are looking to sell assets of this nature, they may want to get out, but the biggest drawback is they're afraid they won't be able to replace the income they were receiving. And that's a big problem that limits people from making decisions that they would like to make. And so what we're going to talk today about, I think, is going to show people that that option is wide open now. You actually can, in fact, replace your income and maybe even do better.
We definitely like doing better, and especially if it can prevent us from tax. 35 to 40%, you know, and Greg is a tax goddess. I think you're actually being almost slightly conservative. You know, Greg is actually out of California, so I've seen tax rates as high as 60 to 75%, depending on what it is somebody's selling, what type of income they're selling, that kind of thing. So, Greg, I love it. 35 to 40%. If you can get us down,
That's just the ordinary income tax side, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Look at capital gains, just capital gains.
But,
yeah, you throw everything into the mix. I'll defer to you, and I think you're right.
Those rates will skyrocket. So, listeners, if you guys are here today, it's because you're interested in learning about this awesome strategy to defer the tax on gains, okay? And as you heard Greg say, that can be on real estate, that can be on stocks, that can be on a business sale, that can be on all sorts of different things. So Greg, I am so excited to dig into this very, very, very juicy topic. But I always like to start with a little bit personal, right? Because of course, for our listeners, who is this guy? Why should I listen to him? Shauna, you know, we like you. You're the tax goddess. That's cool. But like, who's this Greg dude? So Greg, tell us what your life was like growing up. How did you get here?
How did I get here? Well, you know, I'm pretty old, so that could be a long story, but I'll try to make it short. So actually, I grew up in San Diego and, you know, just an idyllic childhood, I guess. You know, we're near the beach. We've got lots of things to do there, lots of hills. Favorite activities were, you know, I learned to swim in the ocean. Most people learn in a pool. I learned to swim in the ocean. riding the waves, skateboarding. I don't know if you have ice plant out in Arizona, but one of our favorite pastimes was taking the appliance cardboard boxes and sliding down these massive hills covered with ice plant. And you would get some speed going, and we'd spend days and days doing that kind of stuff. Later on, moved to Orange County, probably in middle school time, and have sort of lived here most of my life since then, although I went to college back in San Diego. I would say I was a finance major. I got involved in investment services, working with a big broker dealer in their due diligence department, got exposed to that. Was taking master's level courses in financial services, which was a new master's program when I was there. So it was a lot of fun. A lot of trips to Mexico. You guys have access to Mexico and Arizona too. So, spent a lot of time going down there when it was pretty safe, actually, relatively safe. And I think it's still pretty safe, but some people are nervous. Anyway, later on, you want to know kind of career background? Is that what you're?
So, a lot of it is the passion. I mean, so, protecting people's assets is not normally something you think about as a kid sliding down ice plants down the side of a hill.
That's true.
So how did you get into this passion for protecting people's assets? How did that happen?
I think early on, I've always been, for the most part, self-employed. So out of college, I joined the family real estate business. So my father's a real estate broker, and got to cut my teeth in the investment side of real estate, dealing mostly with multi-unit apartment complexes, mini storage, a little bit of commercial, and then took those experiences and skills and got into investment advising and securities licenses, insurance. So I have insurance, securities, investment licenses, and I'm working with people to help them. So I found the real estate was rewarding, but then those clients, good clients, would ask me about other things. They say, Greg, I like real estate too, but I don't feel very well diversified. What can you tell me about this, this, and this? And of course, I had studied a lot of that in college and also worked at a broker dealer, so I was exposed to all those things. And I figured I needed to get licensed so actually I could actually talk about them, because otherwise you can't, right? So I did, and so I built a financial planning practice around those disciplines. And one thing led to another, and I started taking courses in estate and business succession planning. And through that, I started connecting and networking with various attorneys to help my clients. I said, just as though they need diversification in their investments, they also need protection. And I just became fascinated with the estate planning side and the business succession planning side. And I ended up gravitating towards creating a company because I wasn't thrilled with all the relationships of the attorneys. I'd refer them to clients, but it worked well for the most part. But there's always those cases where the attorney created a disconnect. They either charged too much, they took too long, they weren't responsive to the client's needs, and I just felt that that was, something that there could be a better way. There should be a better way. So I kind of created a better, and then I went to work for a high volume estate planning attorney's office in my so-called spare time, and I learned all the back office of what goes on inside of a high functioning law firm, and became effectively their lead paralegal, estate planning paralegal, in the other 20 hours of the 80-hour week I think I was working. So
Sleep, who needs sleep? You see, entrepreneurs out there, you know this. This is the anthem. Who needs sleep?
that's right. That's about when I started drinking coffee. I wasn't comfortable at that point. So, it was that experience that kind of gave me an idea that, hey, we can create an organization here and we can bring other people into the mix. We can create, custom, affordable, consistent, high quality, estate planning to serve people that were generally underserved. You think of the affluent and the very wealthy have access to CPAs of your caliber and attorneys and so forth, and the middle class don't necessarily know where to go. And so our company, forming that company, was designed to really address people that didn't have good access, didn't know where to go, did or were afraid of the cost or all of those factors. So we made it easy for them, we made it affordable, yet we delivered high quality. And so that's where my company, AmeriState Legal Plan, was born. And we've served 40,000 clients now in the last 20 years. We're in 6 different states, and we focus on estate planning there and asset protection planning and public benefits planning, which are all really great topics for me to talk about at a future date. But but I think that's where it came from.
Love it.
So if I've hit my 2-minute mark.
A passion to help people. So I love it. And the entrepreneurial drive to fill a niche that you could not find. You just couldn't find the right people, couldn't find the right mix. So you built your own.
So I built my own. We based it on more technology and more processes and systems to be able to serve a higher volume of clients, but yet do it efficiently and still at a high quality without, you know, skipping any steps or anything like that. But because we could create more of a team-oriented process around it, we could save people money because not everybody in the team needs to make the attorney rate or hourly rate, you know, which is $400 and up in a lot of cases today.
Yeah.
Right? So,
yeah.
So that's how it all began, and here we are.
And here we are. Well, and I think you hit on something really big for me, which is, you know, tax strategies or legal strategies. And anytime you hear the word strategy, many people think, well, I'm not going to be able to afford that. I'm not going to be able to get what the big boys get or what the big clients get or whatever. But that's not necessarily true. I mean, you've just said, yes, you can get legal strategies and legal advice and these kinds of things. And of course, from a tax standpoint, same thing, right? There are ways to get strategies that are meant for the big boys down to the people. And that this is where you and I get along really well, Greg, because we get to save people all this money and help them pay for the strategies, which is even better. So love it. Love it. Love it. Okay. So last personal question, and then we'll jump into some of the business stuff. So what book, now you are clearly amazingly read, you have studied and knowledge and did all these things. What is the book that you gift the most to the world, to people?
You know, that's an interesting question when you ask that, because I read, I'm a voracious reader. I read all the time. And I read a lot of books on leadership, strategy, business, and all of that. And what I had decided to do is I created a library in my office, and I bring all the books that I read into my office and had my staff create a library so that my staff has access to all these books too. And it's really cool to watch them pick up a book when they go into the break room to have lunch or something like that, or they're taking a break out in the sunshine and, you know, they want to read something, they want to learn something. So there's a lot of books on all those topics, and I couldn't even begin to go down the list, but the book that I think I've given away the most is actually a book called Shantaram. Have you read it?
I have, and it's an absolutely amazing story. I can't believe that that's coming out of your mouth right now. I love that book.
So it has nothing to do with business, but it's about culture and understanding other people, you know, and quickly, you've read it. So, you know, it's about a convicted bank robber in Australia who's in prison, escapes from prison, and escapes to India, and then lives in the slums and is treated like the medicine man for this slum community. But just the adventures that he has, and it's, I think what I loved most about that book was you could see, touch, taste, feel, you know, the culture of India and all the classes and what people go through and what their lives are like, and just gave me kind of this wow, you know, understanding a little bit of what that culture is like and what it takes to live there, you know.
So I love
that's
it.
The book I've given away the most, I'd say.
I absolutely love it. Now, I've got this huge grin. If you guys are physically watching us, I've got this huge grin right now because love that book. It is not for the faint of heart. The book itself is something like 3,000 or 4,000 pages. I mean, it's a massive, massive book. I think the first time I read it, bunny quotes, right? Air quotes. I actually listened to it on Audible, and it was something like 120 hours of story on Audible. So
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So if any of you out there want to read that book, Audible, whatever, brilliant. That is fantastic. That's awesome, Greg. I had no clue. That is fantastic.
See, something new.
Dig it. All right, well, now that you've given us a little bit of background on yourself, are you ready for some business stuff?
I'm ready for some business,
All
sure.
right, so we are here to educate, entertain, and inspire the audience. So one of the things that I want to know right off the bat for you is, what does your typical day look like?
My typical day?
Yeah.
Well, that's my typical day these days is extremely busy and extremely scheduled. I have a staff of 30 employees here at the office, and I've got amazing leadership that are really taking things to the next level here. And it frees me up to actually talk with clients, to develop strategy, to lead the company, to kind of head it forward. But one of the things I'm spending a lot of time on right now is the deferred sales trust and consulting with prospective sellers of appreciated assets, consulting with the attorneys, consulting with their CPAs, folks like you, kind of bringing the information and the knowledge forward, analyzing cases. That's probably one of my strengths is taking a wide set of facts and circumstances and try to distill it down into as simple a strategy as I could possibly come up with. Because we don't want things to be complicated for our clients. And so, even though it's a complicated world, but having sort of a background in some tax, investment planning, insurance, real estate, estate planning, asset protection, all of these disciplines, they all kind of coalesce and allow you to see things from different perspectives. So I spend probably 4 to 5 hours of my day just on telephone consultations and webinars and things of that nature. I spend a couple hours doing case analysis and just moving the ball forward. And I've got a terrific staff that helps me stay organized and stay focused. And that's my day. But I typically have a 10-hour day.
And entrepreneurs, again, I feel like I'm hearing a checklist for every entrepreneur I know, right? Sleep 10 hours is the way it is. I love it, love it, love it.
That's right.
Dig it. Okay, so let's jump to the deferred sales trust. Okay, because this is really, and I am so super excited to be talking about this subject because we have seen together, Greg, and you and I have seen cases for $12 million business sales and $2 million property sales, and hopefully coming up a $25 million crypto sale. I mean, there's just so many options for this deferred sales trust. So let's keep it simple. Let's start at the beginning. What is a DST? What is a deferred sales trust?
Okay, so simply a DST is a legal and tax-based strategy or method of being able to sell an appreciated asset, convert the proceeds from that asset usually into more liquid and diversified funds that can be invested, deferring the recognition of the tax on the sale and allowing you to replace or increase income that you were otherwise receiving. And it's based on IRC or Internal Revenue Code 453, which deals with a concept known as installment sales. And that's essentially what a DST is.
Love it. And I always promise that we will never use tax code. So installment sales 453, you can go read it, but give us the basics. So installment sale, what does that mean?
So an installment sale, pretty common strategy actually in a lot of walks of life, sale of small business and medium-sized businesses. A lot of times what we hear the term seller carry back in a real estate transaction, but it effectively means that, well, let me back up. When you sell an asset that has appreciated and you would expect to pay taxes on the gain, the reason you pay tax is because you received the money.
Right.
If you can have some mechanism where you don't receive all of the proceeds at the time of sale, but yet those proceeds can be held and then distributed out to you in installments or in periodic payments, that's what allows you to defer the recognition and paying taxes because you can take this, $5 million sale thinking I'm going to pay $2 or $3 million in taxes, right? But you could actually use the money you otherwise would have paid in taxes to generate personal income for yourself, and it's extremely powerful.
So effectively what we're talking about. So backing up a step, you said because you're not receiving the money. So for our listeners out there, sometimes you're going to hear this term constructive receipt, right? Which will be right. used in the same place, right? If you've constructively received the cash or the payout or whatever it is, you're done, you're cooked, you're going to pay tax. That's kind of the baseline. How much tax you're going to pay is up to people like me, strategy, right? Right. But if you get it, you got it. The IRS wants their cut. It just is how it is, period.
That's right.
So what we're talking about with a DST, a deferred sales trust, right? You can almost hear it right. in the name, is we are deferring the sale, the gain on sale. So you're only paying tax when you actually receive it, which is great, right? So sure. when you're talking about earning more on your money, so basic example, so I have this $5 million thing that I am going to sell, and if I sold it normally, let's just use $2 million as the tax bill. So I would come out with $3 million, right? And I can do, I've paid my tax, so that $3 million is mine. I can do anything I want to with my $3 million. I decide to go put it into stocks because I don't know what else to put it into. Right. So I'm going to put it in stocks and hope there's a long term, you know, increase in my value, maybe get some dividends, some interest, whatever it is out of the bank accounts, that kind of thing. So if I use the deferred sales trust, what happens instead?
So with the deferred sales trust, it's a little bit of a two step process. So a specialized trust is created for you to act as an intermediary between you and your buyer. So but when you go to sell your asset, you're first going to sell it to the trust right at the end of your escrow period. So if it's an escrow, like in real estate, when you have your buyer and you've negotiated your price and everything is ready to go, but you're still in escrow, then the trust steps in and purchases your asset from you at the same terms that you've already negotiated with your buyer. The trust then resells it onto the buyer in about 24 hours. So the buyer gets the asset that they want, and the buyer's cash bypasses you into your trust. If it went to you, you'd have to recognize the gain, but it goes into your trust, and that trust is managed by a professional certified trustee, of which that's one of my roles. I'm one of 13 certified trustees for the Deferred Sales Trust in the nation. And so somebody like myself is going to be working with you, securing your funds to be repaid back to you with interest over whatever period of time you should stipulate. And in that way you save, but you asked really about how does that work with the taxes, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, why would I do that, right? So okay, I got it. There's a trust and you're a trustee, and my brain is going off on all sorts of questions, right, for the audience out there, right? Well, how are you not going to run off with my money? Like, how does all that work? But we'll come to that bit. So
okay.
So the money hits the trust. One thing at a time. I love it. The money hits the trust. So how much hit the trust? If we're doing our $5 million example, how much money hits the trust?
So instead of netting $3 million because you had to pay that $2 million in taxes, the entire net proceeds of $5 million goes into your trust. So
okay.
Look at it very simply. If you're a typical client who's looking to sell that asset and generate a retirement income or some income stream for yourself,
yeah.
The DST, and let's just use a hypothetical rate of return of 5%. Okay. If you have $5 million, at 5% a year, interest only.
Yep.
So I don't want to touch the principal. What's that annual income stream?
$250,000.
Okay. But what if I had to pay $2,000 in taxes first, and I have $3 million to do the same thing with at 5%? What am I earning?
Yep. Now we're only getting $150,000.
$150,000. So the deferred sales trust effectively increased your income from $150,000 a year to $300,000. $350,000 a year? What did we say?
Yeah, $250,000 versus $150,000. So we got an extra $100,000.
Extra $100,000.
Now, okay, which is great, and all is good and fine, but Greg, what happens when you run off with my $5 million?
Well, that actually can't happen. The trusts are set up with sort of like an escrow account with a bank. So we use a bank to sort of escrow. We call it a deposit account control agreement, but it's It's essentially a mechanism where no funds can be moved out of your trust without the joint signature of you, the seller, taxpayer, and the trustee, and the bank, actually. So you actually have to draw up. And one of my activities, if you will, is when the client wants, you know, their payments to be made a certain way, or they want invested a certain way, part of my responsibility is to draw up the funds disbursement authorization and circulate that to the client and to the bank, because the trustee in the deferred sales trust does not have unilateral power to move money at all.
So you're not buying a new Ferrari, right, Greg?
No, and I'm not building onto my private island in Caribbean either. Can't do that. It's impossible for any one person to move the funds, which is important.
Well, that's a big concern. I mean, especially if you're a business owner, you know, you've spent 20 years of your life building this business that now you've sold. I mean, that's for a lot of people, that is your nest egg. They haven't done so well, maybe putting into retirement or doing whatever. I mean, this is what they're going to live on. So the money goes into the trust, right? There's control agreements, so this is good. So Greg's not going to, you're not running off with the money, Greg, right? So that's cool.
That's
okay,
right.
So the money's in the trust, but because I'm not allowed to have constructive receipt, right? So how, you said that let's say I'm the client, right? I would actually have to call you to invest it, or how does that whole bit work?
So the structure is based on an installment sale, which involves a note or a promise to pay. And the promise to pay basically says, Mr. Seller Taxpayer, the trust is holding X amount of money of yours, $3 million, $5 million, whatever it is. That money will be repaid to you over a period of time that you're going to decide in advance, and we're going to pay you an interest rate on the unpaid principal. So you will work with the trustee and a professional investment advisor to sort of figure out how much do I want to receive on a monthly or an annual basis. And we work with the CPA to determine how to maybe tax engineer that. How do I keep my client at the next lowest tax bracket, for example, netting them a little bit more money as a result, whatever it may be. So the seller taxpayer has a lot of control in this. They decide how they want to be paid back. They decide how long the payments are going to last, and the payments will last, you know, usually 10 years or less. That's usually the longest note that we'll create. So 10 years or less. I've got some that are 5, but that's usually the structure. Some clients will decide to take interest-only payments, meaning they're living off of the tax money perpetually, what they would have otherwise paid. That's that.
Live off the government! Yay!
That $100,000 difference, what does that represent? That represents the money that you're earning on money you otherwise would have paid in taxes. That's that $100,000, which is
free money. Free money? Does anybody raise hands in the audience? Free money, right? We love free money.
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead, Greg.
So the client has control. So we set up an agreement or a note or installment note up front, and the client will say, okay, I think I want to take interest-only payments, 5-6%, depending on a couple factors. And that's what I want to do. And then pay back the principal down the road, let's say after 7 or 10 years. And they're collecting a monthly income stream, which is great for them. And they're deferring taxes on the sale. But what if they come back in a couple years and say, you know what, I have a need for additional funds. Can we modify this note? I know we set interest only and pay the principal later. Can we modify it to start distributing more principal or some lump sums? Because I got twin daughters and they're getting married next year. That's going to cost me a couple dollars.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about that 3 years ago when I first set this up, right? So, and the answer to that is yes. And which makes it very flexible. We work with the client, and part of our job is to make sure it stays tax compliant. The one thing you can't have is treating your DST trust like a personal piggy bank, where you're coming down every few months for a big withdrawal. If you're doing that, it sort of violates some of the terms. But there's nothing that prevents you from changing the installment agreement from one thing to another thing and accelerate your payments. Or if you like what's going on, extend them out another 10 years. Extend them out perpetually if you want to.
So let's talk about perpetual, you know, because some people, right, especially the older generations, were really, really, really good at putting away into retirement. So besides, for example, selling their business and getting this stream of revenue, they already have enough, right? What if they want to pass it on to heirs or, you know, how does that work?
So that's a good question. So you're right. Some cases, people don't need the extra income. Or they only want part of the income that's actually being generated for them. So they can elect to defer payments, which just means they won't pay any taxes if they completely defer payments for a few years. And what the interest does is it adds on top of their principal. So their balance grows over time. If they should pass away, those payments are going to continue to their heirs, typically through their own personal estate plan, usually having a revocable living trust in place. So that means that if something happens to them before all the funds are paid out, they'll continue to be paid out to their family members. And if in settling their estate, their executor or trustee determines that it's in the family's best interest to accelerate those payments and have it all paid out now or over a much shorter period of time, then we'll modify the note for them to meet their objectives. And the same thing, they could extend it if they want. So it's so flexible, and everything finds its way to you or finds its way to your family, and it's awesome.
And there you go. Well, and so as you guys are hearing, this the DST is one piece of a much larger puzzle, right? You just heard Greg talk about the revocable living trust, right? There's easily 10 different types of trusts out in the world, and so this is where you need a professional who knows what you're even looking at, right? What are your end goals? As you guys have heard me talk about so many times, right? Sure, we can create tax plans. You can use tax strategies, legal strategies. You can use them for anything you want to. But if your professional team has never asked you, what are you trying to accomplish? Where are you trying to go with your money, with your business, with your real estate, with whatever it is that you own and that you have? It's time to find a new professional team, because if they haven't asked you what your goal is, they're planning with no connection to anything that you actually want. Yeah. So I'm thrilled to hear you even talk about the revocable trust. And I know that's not today's covered topic. So guys, you know, if we love Greg this much, you know, we will call him back. Well, we love Greg this much, but if you guys love Greg this much, we will call him back and we can talk about all those other lovely things. But okay. So DST. So let's stay on the subject. I think we kind of understand the basics of it. What are some common pitfalls, like areas that could really cause problems? You talked about somebody coming back and using it as a personal piggy bank. That's just bad all the way around. The IRS doesn't like it when you muck with things. What other types of pitfalls have you seen?
Well, we don't really find any pitfalls once the strategy is executed with the client.
Okay.
It runs pretty smooth. The reason it runs pretty smooth is because we have professional trained folks that are working with the client. So in the context of the deferred sales trust, there's a tax attorney. They're the architects of the strategy that we use or work with. They're the ones that really put all the requirements down, because they're the ones on top of what the IRS will approve and what they won't approve. Then professional trustees are trained and certified and go through a myriad of background checks and so forth. Trained and approved registered investment advisors with experience and training and understanding about the deferred sales trust and how it works is crucial to making it work for our clients, because part of our job is to secure the principal, generate the income, but also keep it tax compliant. So if we just do everything that anybody could want, it may jeopardize the strategy. So we have to be professional about making sure that, Mr. Client, I know you want to come in and use it as a piggy bank and withdraw $50,000, you know, every third or fifth month. And that's not what's, if you want to write that into the note, let's do that. But if you want to go outside of that and just get extra withdrawals without taking care of those important formalities, then we're going to have to, like, let's find out, like you said, let's find out what you're trying to accomplish. Let's make it happen for you in a legal, legitimate way, so it doesn't jeopardize the rest of it and cause you to pay a bunch of taxes before you're ready. That's sort of the point. Before the transaction, what are the pitfalls that could come out? So there is one main pitfall, there can be solutions to it, but when somebody has a situation with their asset they're selling where the mortgages or the debt that they're carrying is more than what they originally paid for the asset. So when does that happen? That will typically happen in a property owner situation where they have refinanced and pulled cash out, and a lot of cash out, and now their mortgage is more than what they paid. And that's called loan over basis. That's a tough one to cure. So if you spent a $500,000 for a apartment building and later on it's worth $1 million, but you had refinanced it along the way and pulled an extra $250,000 out of it, so you pulled $750,000 out, pulled all your equity almost. So now your loan is $750,000, but you paid $500,000. There's a tax that gets imposed that DST can't even solve on just that amount. Now, could you pay that down to avoid paying the tax? Yes. Are there things that you could look at? Yes. But that is kind of the one thing that can create, it's like an aha moment. What can we do about that? So that's more strategy and analysis that goes in, but that's probably the most common problem that we really have to take extra time to think about.
Okay, so as usual, debt is generally bad, guys. You better have a really good reason for having debt. I love good debt, but this can cause problems if you're trying to sell, if you're trying to make changes. So, okay. So, one of the biggest things that really caught me, Greg, was that honestly, no one has heard of this thing. No one, I mean, 1031 is a very common piece of language out in the world these days. You mentioned 1031 to a real estate person, got it, check it. By the way, if any of you are real estate people out there and you mention 1031 to your CPA or your professional, your legal professional, and they don't know what that is, run away, right? You guys know I will tell you when to run away. So if they do, if they say they're real estate and they don't know 1031, run away. But the DST is not something that is a very common piece of knowledge. So obviously you've spent years training and educating and getting all of this information. What is the best way for our listeners out there to learn more about the DST program if they have additional questions, other things, they've thought of something that we didn't cover today? What else, where else can they go?
Well, they can go to our website or websites to learn more about it. They can talk to their CPAs. They can engage with one of the approved professionals, such as myself, to have a simple phone call or a personal webinar, or if you have a team or a group that you want to review this or you want to talk to the CPA. Those are the ways you can go about it. I'd like to address your question is, a lot of people have not heard about the Deferred Sales Trust, aka DST, yet. But a lot of people, and every one of your accountants, has heard of 453 installment sales. They know what that is. The key benefit or the feature of the DST is our attorneys have figured out a way to remove the problems that are associated with traditional installment sales and have trademarked the entire strategy under the name Deferred Sales Trust. And so when people look in the tax code for the term Deferred Sales Trust, they don't see it because a Deferred Sales Trust is an installment sale, but it's carving out the bad stuff and only including the good stuff. If that's oversimplification, I'm sorry, but this is really what we're doing.
Well, I'm smiling because, of course, the question that runs through my mind is, and you did that how with the IRS? So I know you've given me personally a little bit of hint on this, right? But people that are skeptical, there are so many scams out there. There really are, Greg. I mean, you know this. The IRS releases their top 12 dirty dozen every single year of scams. Now, listeners, I would never ever bring you a scam. So, but how do people know that this is valid? How do they check it if their CPA has never even heard? Because honestly, a lot of CPAs haven't heard of an installment sale either, which is kind of scary. But how do they check this stuff? Again, obviously they can speak with you, but how do they check to know that this is a valid good thing?
Well, part of the process, I think, is actually engaging with us. when we've got a potential seller of an asset, whether it be a business owner who is looking to sell or a property owner looking to sell, then they really start with initial consultations. They'll talk with myself, they'll talk with you, we'll have conference calls, and we'll talk about the strategy. We'll talk to them about the fact that the strategy has been successfully deployed for over 21 years by the Campbell Law Firm, which is our primary tax law firm that developed this in the first place. They've had 14 audits over the course of the 21 years that have all come back with a no change letter. You know what that is.
Absolutely.
It's all good. No penalties, no taxes, no interest. We accept what you presented to us. They've also had a formal review, business to IRS, spending days going through all of the structure and strategy that's used. And the IRS said, okay, this is good. There's never been an adverse result. So we can tell you these things, and we hope you believe us. But when we actually have a client who is, you know, a qualified prospect, they want to move forward, but they want to see a little bit more. That's okay. So what we do, because this is a proprietary strategy, the attorneys are not going to publish all of the IRS letter rulings on the internet because it's proprietary. Right. They don't want anybody else to try to figure out how to do this and catch up with them, even though we're 21 years ahead of anybody else, which is an important distinction, because you want to know that it's been tried and true a little bit. So,
and you also want to work with somebody who's done it, who's seen the pitfalls, who has looked at all of the options and all the different ways. And we haven't even gotten to the case studies yet, Greg. We got to still cover three different case studies here. But, you know, that it's important to know that it's not just Bob, your next-door attorney, who just read about it online and said, yeah, I could totally handle that for you, right? You want to work with somebody who actually has done it, seen it, been through the battles with the IRS, done the stuff. So,
And the attorneys are willing to share that information. They just want to share it with people that are, you know, potentially legitimate clients, so we're not, again, putting it through the internet. So they just ask a potential client who wants to know, or their CPA who wants to know, and they sign a non-disclosure agreement to protect the proprietary nature of the strategy, and then they will share, you know, redacting the names, protect the innocent, but they'll share the IRS reviews that have been done and explain them or what have you. So there is some support behind just saying that this is legitimate and it's been tested. We actually have stuff to back it up.
Love it. Love it. Now, okay, so we talked about qualified prospects for this type of strategy. You know, Greg, I have brought case after case after case, and most of them have been good, but there's kind of a cutoff line, right? Because, you know, real estate, for example, if somebody's selling a home that's the total sales price is only $150,000, this might not be the right strategy because, of course, like everything else, there are costs to setting up a strategy. So what's kind of that dividing line? Like, where's the break-even point? Where does it start become worth it to even look at doing a deferred sales strategy?
That's a great question, and you're exactly right. You have to kind of weigh the economic benefit for the client.
Right.
When does it make sense for them? It has to be about that. So what we've discovered is the DST generally starts to make sense when the client or the taxpayer is facing a minimum of $200,000 in capital gain. That's not the tax that they're going to pay. That's how much profit they're going to be taxed on. So when you take a look at how much profit is there in this transaction, if it's at least $250,000 or at least $200,000, then the DST is an attractive alternative. The larger it goes, the more and more and more attractive it is. And that is because there is a legal fee to set up the transaction. There is an ongoing trustee fee for overseeing this and making sure it stays compliant and the client gets the payments they expect. There usually is an approved qualified investment advisor making sure that those funds are well invested, diversified, safe, and are generating the kind of income that we need for the client. And so because that's involved, that gives us sort of a minimum, what we call a minimum viable transaction. And if your gain is less than $200,000, we're going to suggest maybe some other strategies, or maybe even, you know, maybe you should consider paying the tax and just
having your money
proceeds. Have your money, do whatever you want, and move forward. But we're always going to look at it from the point of view of what's in it for you, not what's in it for us.
I love it. I love it. And that's, again, going back to what are your goals, client? What are you looking to do? So fabulous. All about the client. We love it, Greg.
That's right.
All right. So.
Think about that.
Yeah.
At the beginning. I learned something at the very early stages of my sales career, if you will. And somebody told me something that stuck with me forever. He says, you know what? If you can help enough people get what they need and want, you don't have to worry about what you need and want. It's that simple.
And there you go.
And it's been true. For 25 years, that's been so true.
I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, as usual, Greg, a wealth of knowledge. Okay, so give us here because, okay, so we've talked about real estate today, right? So $200,000 gain on a piece of real estate. So that's purchase price versus what you're selling it for, plus any improvements, right? Purchase plus improvements versus what you're selling it. So there's your gain. A business. Now, if you're selling a business, it depends on whether you bought the business or whether you grew the business, right, from scratch. Right. Your basis could be very, very, very small in a business, depending on, you know, that you'd have to check with your CPA, check with your accounting team, right? But, okay, so that's a business sale. What other, can you give me some examples, other things that people should be thinking about? Real estate, business sales, what else?
High-value collectibles come into the mix. We've had some interesting cases dealing with collectibles, antique cars, like antique Ferraris or things of that nature that have really skyrocketed in value. If you sell that car and you might have paid $50,000 for it and it's worth $1 million today, I think you're going to pay a capital gain if you sell that car. The DST can be used for that. I have a client, which I think I've told you about. They purchased a boulder out of a known gem field in a region of Cambodia where they twice a year they auction off these boulders, you know, and to the highest bidder. And a little group of investors came in and spent $100,000 for this boulder, size of a linebacker. They started shaving it down with one of those huge radio saws, and they discovered in the heart of this thing a 5.5 kilogram ruby. $200 million.
That's awesome.
And it could have got nothing. And you know,
it's the risk you take. That's the risk.
Like paying for gold at the amusement park, you know, you never know what you're gonna get. But they ended up with this crazy land windfall, and of course, they're looking to sell it, and it's all going to be taxable.
Yeah.
But we can use the DST for this, so they can defer their taxes. Put some of that money, in this case, my client is a Buddhist monk. So most of the money is going to be earmarked for charity and good works and building up communities and bringing jobs and stuff to his home country. And so it's going to be amazing. There's charitable trusts and there's the DST. And, you know, I can imagine the good works that are going to flow out of this incredible find. But collectibles, artwork, you know, paintings, things of that nature. Anything that's got that sort of a gain associated with it, the DST can be used with any of it.
Love it. Love it. Okay. Dig it. Well, this has just been fabulous. So, Greg, what is the one question that I have not asked you that you want our listeners to know about?
That's a good question. I think we've covered a lot of it. You know, should we cover costs? I mean, your client's interested in knowing what costs there are associated with this.
It's yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. Yeah.
Let's do that because, you know, a lot of people like to tout their strategy, but they don't want to tell you what you're going to pay to get it, right?
Yeah.
And like it's some big secret sauce. So, you know, the DST carries really two primary costs and then a third. So the first is attorney's fees to set up the strategy. And they charge based on a percentage of the assets that are transferred to the DST. There's a charge of 1.5% of the first $1 million of net proceeds and 1.25% of the proceeds that exceed $1 million.
Now, I want to throw in a little tiny comment here, and I don't know if you're about to do it, Greg, but I actually have found this to be very, very important. I want to reiterate what Greg just said, which is they charge you a percentage based on what is transferred into the trust, right? So one of the right. things that I love about this strategy is going back to you real estate people out there, right? You guys, you have a 1031 set up, but you want to have a backup plan, right? You're just not sure if you're going to find that other building or whatever it is. You can set up the trust, right, as a backup plan, but there is no fee to the trust until you transfer the proceeds into the trust. Did I get that right, Greg?
That's exactly right, and you're exactly right. I was going to go right there because the legal retainer is conditional, meaning that they will represent you, do all of the legal work, and only if you use the DST strategy at the time you sell your asset will you owe the legal fee. If you don't use the strategy, then everybody walks away. There is no obligation, there is no fee, and there's no upfront fee. So thank you for segueing into that. That was beautiful. And look at the relationship. You know, we talked about 35 to 45% in taxes, up to 60 or 70% in taxes on gain. So 1.25 to 1.5% to defer all the taxes on that gain and not pay that 35 to 45% or more, that's very reasonable. That's very reasonable.
Reasonable. It's a steal, Greg. And it's not so many things that I say steal, being a CPA, right? This is, in my mind, flat out. Because you're going to earn, I mean, we even used a very conservative number earlier, right? 5% earnings, which I am not a retirement planner, people. You guys know that I'm not a financial advisor. I don't do numbers. This is all just conversation, right? But 5% is generally a very, very conservative number. Even if you use 2%, you're still making more than you paid in the fee to set the thing up, guys.
Right. Because the legal fee is one time.
One time. There you go, flat.
Your earnings are all the time.
We like earnings. All right, so keep going. Sorry, Greg, go ahead, keep going.
And the attorneys, because we talked about how it's been tested and reviewed by the IRS, the attorneys will stand behind what they do. They indemnify the client, which means that in the future, if your transaction is ever audited, state, federal, or before the IRS, they will defend it for free. They will not charge any additional fees to defend an audit. That's all part of their fee. Then there's a trustee fee, which is an ongoing. The trustee, somebody like myself, is going to generally earn 50 basis points, which is the equivalent of 0.5% or less, because it can be as low as 0.35% based on the amount of assets that are overseen inside the DST trust. And that compares very favorably to trustee services. There's a lot of corporate trustees that will take over living trusts and things down the road for clients where they're appointed. And those fees are often 1 to 1.5%. So a DST trustee fee is a lot less. Again, we want to make sure that the maximum economic viability for the client is achieved so that they're happy and they tell more people that have assets to sell about it. And that's how we grow. That's how we grow the business. You know, word of mouth is super important because people look at other people that have been doing it and it's working and they say, well, I've got a building to sell. You know, I'd like to take some time off of getting midnight calls for the hot water that's not working and, you know, that sort of thing. So attorney fee one time, trustee fee is ongoing. And then of course we have an investment advisor that is managing the funds for the trust. Unless the client decides they want to. And here's another important feature. If the client wants the funds in their DST trust to be used to invest in more real estate, for example, or to buy another business,
yeah,
we can make that happen for them too. It's all about securing the client's original money back plus a solid rate of return. But if the client actually wants not only that, but the potential of additional growth, and the way they want to see it is to maybe invest that in another piece of real estate, another building, or in another business and earn some of the appreciation on that or the lion's share of the appreciation on that, we can make that happen too. So, you know, it's incredibly flexible.
Flexibility is good. We like it. We like it. Okay, so guys, I mean, Greg and I could talk for hours and hours and hours more, but I always promise to keep it to 1 hour. We can't today. I always promise to keep it to 1 hour. So, Greg, if our listeners out there want to get more information, what's the best place? Where do they find you?
You know, there's a couple places to find me right now. One is Ameristate.com, which is, you know, I don't know if you have a flash screen to put up or, you know, I don't, but it's spelled AmeriState.com. And you can go in the search bar and search DST or Deferred Sales Trust. You can get a lot of information about the Deferred Sales Trust there. There's also mydstplan.com/RP Trustee. My trustee firm is called Reef Point, so RP Trustee is the URL at the end of mydstplan.com. So those are the two best places to go, but you can also ping Shauna back and she'll get you connected.
Perfect.
Dig it. She knows how to find me.
poor Greg, I don't think he's ever going to get any more sleep ever because he's got a tax goddess hunting him down for tax strategy. I love it. Love it. Yep. All right. So, Greg, very last piece of advice for our entrepreneurs, our fabulous business owners out there. What is your one piece of advice before we sign out today?
You know, just in terms of an entrepreneur or a business owner, you know, we're talking a lot about a particular strategy and that sort of stuff, but if we could just kind of circle back, because I think that's your audience, right?
Yep.
I would say that, you know, be very concise about how you're leading your organization, because if you're the leader of your organization, you're really only responsible for three things. One is to develop a vision, two is to communicate the vision, and three is to hold people accountable for the vision. Beyond that, all you really do or should be doing is making decisions. So try to make more good decisions than bad decisions and surround yourself with really good people because they're your most valuable asset. Yeah. They're more valuable than your money, your equipment, even your clients or your vendors. Your people are the most important aspect of your business. Remember that and take good care of them. That would be my advice.
Love it. Love it. Love it. I'm kind of picturing your team off to the side going, yay.
Yeah, they're all outside the door. Like, no, they're not
crying. Check it. Well, good. They better be out there getting strategy for people. I love it. I love it. All right. So thank you, Greg, so much for being here with us today. It's such a pleasure to have you as a guest. And for all of our listeners out there, if you enjoyed today's chat as much as I did, please show Greg your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who appreciates being knowledgeable and is a passionate business owner, entrepreneur, real estate owner. Those would be perfect people to share today's episode with. So, Greg, you know, it's just been fantastic. You are so sweet to spend time with us today. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Shauna.
And for everybody else, make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast. You can find us at taxgoddesslive.com or, of course, on Podstitcher, Podbeans, iTunes, Google Play. You can find us all over the place. And let us know what you think about the show. If you have any topics that you want covered, if you want Greg to come back, definitely throw some comments to us. And you can always reach out to us on Twitter, taxgoddesslive@taxgoddess.com for the email or @taxgoddess on Twitter. So thanks so much, everyone. And thank you, Greg. Have a great day.
Thank you, Shauna. Thank you, everyone.